I don't feel like I could have done this work any earlier. I definitely did not have anything to say in my 30s. I just didn't. I had to really think about what I wanted to say for a long time. So I feel like I'm the right age to be publishing a debut, despite the fact that I know people publish debuts at much younger ages and that perhaps I am, quote unquote, behind in that way. I just don't feel behind.
This is Finding the Throughline, the show that gives you inside access to honest conversations about the creative process. I'm Kate Hanley. Welcome back to Finding the Throughline, where today's guest is novelist and essayist Daisy Alpert Florin, author of My Last Innocent Year, which the Kirkus Review called a brilliantly crafted campus novel for the generation before Me Too. Today, I'm talking with Daisy about what I call inner stuff, the thoughts, ideas, and attitudes that affect your work and your life, even if you're not fully conscious of it. So, Daisy, I'm curious, does creating your work and then sharing that work, so it's kind of two halves of the same coin, come easily to you?
Yeah, I think it, I mean, the creating is as hard as it is for anyone, but I keep doing it. And the sharing, I like to share my work, I think. Before I wrote this novel, I was writing personal essays. And I think there's always a tendency in personal essays to kind of overshare in order to get more readers or more clicks. And I don't think I was ever very comfortable with that. I love writing fiction because I can share in a way that feels that I have control over the amount that I am sharing. Mm. And I also like the sort of length of time that it takes to write a novel. It gives me a lot of time to really like perfect and craft exactly what I'm sending out into the world. Essays can take a long time too, but there's something a little bit more disposable about them or the way that I was writing them. So I like to do both, but I don't think I'm a big sharer. And I think that's why I sort of like to cloak myself in fiction.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'd love to just drill down on that a little bit. You mentioned that My Last Innocent Year was kind of inspired by some of your personal stories. And by writing fiction, you get to write about things that happen to you, but you don't necessarily have to just like bare your soul and say all these, I lived through all these terrible things. Like, did you recognize that about fiction? Because I think people think fiction is made up. It didn't happen. And I don't know. I'd just love to hear your perspective on like the truth that lies within fiction.
Yeah. I mean, my novel is a novel and it's not an autobiographical novel. But it was a place for me to put some of the feelings that I had about being a college student, leaving college, being a woman at a certain point in history in a certain sort of setting. I was able to put all the feelings I had, but sort of create a story around them that was more propulsive than what actually happened to me, right? I always say if I wrote a memoir about my years in college, it wouldn't actually be very interesting because, like most college students, thank God, terribly big dramatic things didn't happen to me. Internally, it was a very dramatic and tumultuous time. But I feel like the places where the writing was the easiest for me was when I was able to draw on a personal feeling, but like give those feelings to all these fictional characters I'd created and let them make a big mess of things in ways that I perhaps had not. It gave me a lot more control over some of the messier parts of my own experiences that are in the novel. I was able to have more control over them. And I feel very good about having it out in the world in this particular container. It feels like I've crafted, you know, a piece of creative art that's kind of drawn a lasso around my messy feelings about the time.
Sounds very cathartic, quite honestly.
It is.
Is there anything about creating or sharing your work that gives you the heebie-jeebies, like just makes you want to go back to bed? And if so, how do you deal with that?
I have had a great time sort of taking my book on the road, as it were, and going out and talking about it with authors and podcast hosts. I think at this point, almost a year on, I'm probably a little tired of myself. And I don't know that I get the heebie-jeebies, but I guess there's always that feeling of like, oh my God, everybody's sick of me. They're tired of listening to me. So I think a little bit of that fatigue. But I haven't been asked to do anything that's really given me the heebie-jeebies. You know, I mean, I think I'm lucky. Nothing has quite given me the heebie-jeebies yet.
That's good.
There's time, I guess.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm curious. I ask everybody this, and while there are definitely similar themes, sometimes there's, I don't know, I'll just let you answer the question. What kinds of things does your inner critic love to tell you?
Well, my inner critic is noisy, but I think that the main thing it likes to tell me is that I'm not really trained to do this, that I don't have the proper training. And I think I thought that for a really long time. I wasn't an English major, like I said. I didn't write for the literary magazine in college. I wasn't even a terribly bookish child, you know. I definitely like read the Cliff's Notes for a lot of things in high school. I didn't always read the right things. I sometimes think I'm not like terribly well read. I don't have an MFA, you know, all those things. So I think a lot of that was like, well, you're not really a novelist because you weren't trained for that. You didn't sort of know you wanted to write a novel when you were 6 years old. So I still have to fight that a lot. One of the post-its that I had above my desk when I was writing, as writers are love to have inspirational post-its above their desk to keep them going, one of mine was, everything you've done has prepared you for this. So it was just like, I did a lot of musical theater as a kid growing up, and that prepared me for this. You know, it's like I sang in an a cappella group in college. So that prepared me for this. I worked at a newspaper after college. I worked in book publishing. I went back to school and got a master's in early childhood and elementary education. Like all these things, I just had to believe that they had prepared me enough. And I still tell myself that now. Sometimes my inner critic now wants to tell me I only had one book in me. This was the story I could tell. I can't tell another story. I don't have another story. And I can recognize that as a separate voice. Oh, there's that critic telling me that thing again. But it comes up all the time.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I know that everybody has it, and I think we all kind of think that we're the only ones suffering from this kind of diatribe. So it really helps to hear your perspective on that.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, Daisy, in our first set of questions, and if you're listening to the free version, that means the previous episode, you shared that you turned 50 the year that your book came out. So, how old are you now? Are you 51?
I'm still 50. Yeah. I'll be 51 in May. So, hanging on to 50.
Okay, great. And how would you say, you being the age that you are doing the work that you're doing now, how does age play into that for you?
I don't think about my age that much, except when I sometimes tell people my age and they think it's sort of a shocking age for me to be or something. And I don't feel like I could have done this work any earlier. I definitely did not have anything to say in my 30s. I just didn't. I had to really think about what I wanted to say for a long time. So I feel like I'm the right age to be publishing a debut, despite the fact that I know people publish debuts at much younger ages and that perhaps I am, quote unquote, behind in that way. I just don't feel behind. I feel that I'm lucky that writing is what I want to do, because as long as I can still come up with things to say, and I guess that is the big if there, but I don't need to be young to do what I'm doing.
Oh, that's awesome. So has being 50, has it changed your idea of what's possible for you from here on out? Like, with the timeline that you have, I'm curious, like, does that come into your thought process?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not trying to like enter the Olympics as a figure skater or something. I mean, I guess if anything, it's just, you know, will I have something to say that people still think is interesting? Or will my ideas and thoughts kind of eventually reflect my age? They probably already do. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I won't probably write 20 more novels, but I probably wouldn't have written that many anyway. So I hope just write a couple more.
Well, it is a good time to be an older woman, because we're just hearing their stories, hearing their voices more and more and more than ever in the past. And so you can be part of that forefront. Actually, you're reminding me that I recently read a debut short story collection by a woman in her mid-80s.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't recall her name, but it's called Cat Brushing, if people are interested.
I was going to say Cat Brushing, and I don't recall her name either, but I have heard of that collection, and that's fantastic.
Yeah. I will say,
the other thing about being my age is that I raised my kids now. I have three kids and they're 14, 18, and 20. So I really feel in a lot of ways like I have more freedom now than I had 15 years ago, for sure. So maybe that leads to my general sense of buoyancy around moving into my next decades, that I've done this really hard work. And now it feels like I can sort of focus on myself. Anything feels possible once you don't have like a 3-year-old anymore.
Right. Well, and once you've launched three adults, like,
yeah.
You have to feel pretty competent, I would say, you know?
I don't know, but I feel something. Yeah.
Well, thanks for mentioning that, because I'm always like, that's some way that my inner critic can chime in, is that like, oh, other people can do it because they're not raising kids right now.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. Raising kids is no joke. Yeah. I think it's very hard work, right? It's not just a state of being. It's an actual like physical, emotional, mental practice every single day.
Yes, it is. Are there collective illusions that you wish we would wake up from?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea that there's just one path to doing anything, or that there is any path at all. I mean, raising kids now, you know, and trying to see their lives as being multifaceted and hopefully, God willing, having lots of twists and turns. When your kids apply to college, for example, it's this idea of like, well, what do you want to study? And what's that going to look like in your life? And I've seen kids come up with answers for that at 17 years old. And it's like, okay, I hope that's how it works for you, but I'm willing to bet it's not going to work like that. But I just think the idea that there's really any certainty at all in what we set out to do, I think that I felt very lost for a very, very long time because I did not have a path that felt clear to me at all. And I think that's because deep down, I wanted to be a creative person, and there wasn't really a path for that. And I think I thought there was, I just couldn't find it, or I just was like kind of a loser. You know, everyone else had figured it out somehow, and I hadn't. So I think that would be an illusion I would like disavow people of.
Yes. And I'm curious if there's something that you were taught, maybe you were taught expressly by a parent or a family member or a teacher, or maybe it's just kind of something you inferred from the culture. And this is similar to my last question, but it's a little bit different in terms of something that you were presented as this is truth, but you have come to realize is just an absolute crock of shit.
I mean, so many things. I mean, I think the sense of achievement and getting gold stars and getting A plus, check plus kind of affirmation from external sources. I think I was raised to seek those things out. And I think it kind of held me back from taking risks or just being a little messier. So that then when life stopped handing out gold stars, I didn't really know what I was supposed to do. I think that held me back. I think that holds a lot of women back. I'm an older sister. All those sort of good girl, look good, be nice, follow the rules kind of thing. It's really exhausting. And I don't think it really gets you anywhere in the end.
Yeah. Is there a way or a moment that you remember when you were like, I'm leaving this behind?
I think after I turned 40, 40 was a big thing for me. I kind of, my kids were a little bit out of from under my wing a little bit. And I felt like I had been young for so long. And now all of a sudden I had like shifted into this new like crone part of my life, whatever, even though I was 40, which now seems like terribly young to me. And I think I had to do a lot of work around that. Like, well, what was I if I wasn't young and nubile and the young, pretty thing, the ingenue, you know, what came next? And the truth was, everything came next. But it wasn't just like a wake up one day and the sun was shining. I mean, it was like some hard, messy work that I had to do. And that was around the time that I was really starting to think about this novel and coinciding with, you know, the Trump years and, you know, not to get political, but all those things that we kind of lived through the past 7 or 8 years. I think that coinciding with my 40s and writing the novel, I think I kind of shook off a lot of that. And I feel very happy to have done that.
Yes. Yes. Amen. And I'm curious, do you think that perimenopause or that physiological transition played into that at all?
Probably. I don't know that it's hit me in the hardest way. You know, I know women really, really struggle with it. And I think I do struggle with it, but I tend to like ignore a lot of my physical things. I think I was kind of raised, that was the way I was raised too. But I mean, I'm sure it has. It's all connected, I'm sure. Mind, body, and all that.
Indeed. All right, Daisy, well, thank you for sharing these answers with us. That wraps up our questions on the inner parts of the creative process. And stay tuned for a preview of our final episode, which is coming up on Friday, where I'm going to be asking Daisy what is currently grabbing her attention, where she thinks the road might be leading her next. And I'm going to ask her our Fast Five questions. So come back. Finding the Throughline airs one interview per week, broken up into three episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. Skip the ads and get each interview in one longer episode by becoming a paid subscriber at katehanley.substack.com. Even if you aren't ready to get out your wallet just yet, become a free subscriber at katehanley.substack.com and receive the full show notes with links to everything my guests and I cover. However you listen, thank you.
Finding the Throughline is edited by Sound Advice Strategies. Connect with me on Instagram at Kate Hanley Author. Here's a little preview of what's to come in part three of this interview.
Taylor Swift is someone I just can't get enough of. Shocker, like every other person right now. But I mean, there is something about her. When I watched her, I went to see her tour and I watched her movie, and I was just in tears about the emotional connection that she creates through her work. I mean, it's her storytelling and the way she's just been able to, she has accessed something that I will not be able to define, but she makes me want to go back to the page. Like, she just kind of fills my cup so much.
I'm Kate Hanley, and this is Finding the Throughline. More to come on Friday.